What is up, Level Up Nation, and welcome to episode 123 of the Level Up Podcast, your home for gaming and esports news, brought to you by the Overtime Network. My name is John, and I am joined by the king of the courtside, Joey. Salutations, friend.
Hi, John. How are you, sir?
Oh, I'm hanging in there. How are you this lovely Monday morning, or afternoon morning? Woo! It's been one of those days.
Hey, you mean evening?
Evening, that too. Afternoon, it's after 12. That counts somewhere, right?
Yeah, we'll count it. Mondays are always tough, Sean. I also worked this past weekend, so it makes it a little bit more difficult having my whole Saturday taken away. So that one day break on Sunday was just not quite enough to go right into Monday for me.
Working on weekends. Boy, I'm so glad my job doesn't make me work on weekends anymore. Nation, make sure you follow the show on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You can find it all at the Level Up Podcast. That's at the LVLUP Podcast. And while you're on Twitter, make sure to give Joey and myself, John, hi, hello, a follow. That is at Courtside King and Fiasco. Again, that is on Twitter. If you're watching here on Twitch live with us, welcome. Salutations to you as well. Those handles are below those beautiful mugshots you're looking at below. And if you're listening to the podcast later on down the road, well, we'll have those in the show notes for you. So you can just do those little copy-paste things for you going into the Twitters. Nation, EA's FIFA franchise has dominated the sports gaming world. FIFA is a major esport title in multiple soccer leagues across the planet. And now the U.S. Soccer Federation is looking like they will be exploring esport options on a national level as well. But that is just one topic on this week's show. Joey, what else are we touching on this week in episode 123?
John, in addition to that beautiful topic, we are also talking about some new esports leagues popping up for the nation. One of those being mobile-based, the other being racing-based, so it'll be exciting to dive into those. On top of that, we have some more Xbox news, some Apex news, more scholarships in the works for esports, and much, much more.
Oh my goodness, Joey, another topic-packed episode of the Level Up Podcast coming to you this week. So Joey, it is time for that next segment, that beautiful drink of choice segment that aids us all the way through the episode. Joey, for the 123rd time, I need your drink of choice, please.
John, I will be going with another bourbon this week, Angel's Envy.
Angel's Envy. Again, Monday. Let's see here. So that is a Coke Zero in my glass in the awesome Winter Classic. Ooh. Capitals versus some team from Chicago. I don't know what they're called. Filled with a healthy dose of Bacardi lemon rum. So I'm going to have some fun today, Joey. I'm going to have some fun. Joey, you have your beverage. I have my beverage as well. Let's waste no more time. Let's get right into gaming and esports news. Let's go.
John, we're going to kick it off with Rainbow Six Siege. Fnatic adding Ryan Speca Austin as their Rainbow Six team's sixth member. Big move here, John. Fnatic did really well emerging as an Aussie team onto the Rainbow Six scene. I believe it was last year or the year before that they kind of really emerged. But as they continue to move their way up, as they continue to take on those stronger teams, they need to continue to improve their roster, and this is a big move to do that.
Yeah, solid addition to Fnatic's team here. Yeah, you know, Rainbow Six is one of those titles where a lot of it feels like teams come and go quite a bit, but it's nice to see Fnatic sticking with Rainbow Six and adding him to their roster. It shows that commitment to the scene, so I like it.
Yeah, honestly, John, Rainbow Six just continues to go up, I feel like, as we continue to see more and more big teams buy in. This was one of those scenes where I almost want to compare it to like a Vainglory, where you have so many lower tier organizations, like not these Team Liquid, not Fnatic, not Cloud9, not these multi-billion dollar, multi-million dollar organizations. But you have all these little ones like Tribe Gaming that not many people have heard of. That's what Rainbow Six was a couple years ago, and it still has a lot of those really good teams that are at a mid-tier level but working their way up, but now it's pulling in the G2 Esports, the Team Liquid, the Cloud9, the Fnatic. They're continuing to pull in bigger and bigger names, and I think the scene's going to continue to grow at a pretty good rate.
Yeah, it definitely goes to show the stability of the title. You know, when you're kind of like a Tier 2, maybe a Tier 3 Esport title, and you're not having those larger organizations buy in, it's really tough to sell that game as a legitimate esport, just because, you know, you do have that fluctuation. You do have those smaller organizations coming in and coming out based upon what their income is and how their results are going and so forth. There's so many more factors that go into it, where a larger organization like a Fnatic or a Team Liquid or a Cloud9 or anything like that, when they jump in, they're willing to ride out the lowest of lows in order to get back to the highest of highs, if you will, for esports. So it's, again, it's great for Fnatic to be doing this, adding a solid player back into the roster, but also just goes to show you how hard that Rainbow Six esports scene has worked to get to this point where those larger organizations feel comfortable investing into their title.
And then as we keep revving up with roster moves, we're going to head on over to Rocket League, where Dignitas adds Snasky as their Rocket League team's new head coach. John, this is an interesting move. So Snasky was previously with the Leftovers, who is one of those teams that didn't quite qualify for the European League Championship Series, I believe is what it was still called at the time. So they didn't end up qualifying. They ended up getting picked up. The Leftovers moved to Fnatic as an organization. Then from there, they went on, they qualified. They did not do well and got relegated again. Since then, Fnatic ended up dropping their league. Snasky's one of those talented players that was left over who did not make that move with the particular team up in its second round. So now that we have Snasky out here, we're going to have to see where he moves. He's moving over here to Dignitas. He's going to be a coach. Is he going to stay in that coaching role? Does he try to reemerge into a player role as well later down the road? I really don't know. It's interesting. I feel like he's a good player. I don't know if he's quite there as a coach for me just yet.
I was waiting to see how many leftover puns you were going to make during that segment. I even put in the in the Twitch chat, Joey pun inbound, and I am proud to say I was correct in my assessment there. So I will leave it at that.
And then for CSGO, we have Mouse Esports announcing their new CSGO roster. It is consisting of Chris J, Frozen, Kerrigan, Ropsicle, and Wasik. So Mouse Esports, one of those teams that has been around for quite a while in the CSGO scene. They never really hover all the way to the top, but they never fall too far from the top 10 either. This is another good roster. Kerrigan especially going to be a great anchor on that team. I'm excited to see them play.
Yeah, I agree. I think the Kerrigan pickup is the one to really focus on here. I think anchor is the correct term for Mouse Esports. Solid additions to their roster going forward. Really excited to see how they compete going forward.
I'm over here drinking bourbon like water, and my throat is starting to burn a little bit. I'm like, I probably should just be drinking water for a moment here.
My goodness, I guess it really was a case of the Mondays for you, John.
Oh, it hit me hard today. Next, we're going to move on to partnerships. ESL and AT&T have partnered up to launch a mobile esports league, the ESL Mobile Open, which began its inaugural season today, offering a prize pool of $330,000. So, John, what sets this apart? Yvette Martinez-Ray, the chief executive officer at ESL Gaming North America, breaks it down for us. ESL Mobile One was developed to provide anyone with a phone access to compete at the highest levels with both established and emerging mobile esports titles. So, this means, John, anyone with that phone who has these particular titles that is competing in this game can jump in and try to earn this prize money. Those titles up for grabs are PUBG Mobile, Clash of Clans, and Asphalt 9 Legends. So what do you think of all this? I personally am not the biggest fan of the titles they chose to launch this thing in particular.
I'm just not a fan of mobile esports. It's a struggle. It's a really, I feel like the people that compete at a competitive level on mobile, really, there's a community there, but I really don't think it's that big. Like when you talk to these, you know, the kids out there that play mobile games, they're playing it for fun with their friends. None of them are really taking it as a competitive level. The kids that do take games at a competitive level are playing on PC and they're playing on console. That's where they're really homing in their traits. And, you know, we've seen mobile esports try to surface, and a lot of them haven't done so well. Clash of Clans, we're really going to do this again. That was a nightmare. I really don't know how this is going to be entertaining to watch from a fan perspective. I understand what they're trying to do here. You know, Joey, side note here real quick. I walked outside of my house and all the neighborhood kids were outside, and we decided to start talking Fortnite. And we're all discussing whether, Fortnite could ever make it into a legitimate esports scene, something we've discussed here on the show multiple times. These kids in my neighborhood are very well versed in esports because they have to put up with me quite a bit. we're talking about it, and one kid made made mention that he's terrible at Fortnite on console and PC, but he absolutely destroys it on his iPad. And then we just kind of looked at him. They're like, well, it's an iPad. You know, it's can that really equate to anything? Like, a lot of people just, it felt too negative. Just the community aspect around it. And I really don't see how us as an esport community, as esport fans, can take that kind of like, but you're playing on an iPad, and move that to, you're still mechanically gifted like a console player on a controller or a PC player. You understand the game. You understand the blah, 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 blah. And yes, that could become a legitimate esport. I just feel like there's a huge translation error there when you are taking a mobile game, or Fortnite may have been a bad example, but taking a mobile game and trying to make it into like the next Overwatch, the next League of Legends, something that big on that scale.
So I actually think this is going to work had they picked the right titles. And the big reason is I don't think mobile esports is a great viewership platform more than anything. I mean, we saw Clash Royale League. It didn't really take off in Europe or North America. Vainglory, the same kind of thing. This in particular for me pulls in those casual gamers. Like the quote said, it's for something that everyone can kind of jump into. If your mother wants to play, if your daughter wants to play, it's kind of all ages can really jump in. Obviously, they're not all going to compete at the highest level, depending how they're playing the game. But at the same point, it does make it more accessible. We also look at people that can't afford PCs. Not everyone can afford a gaming PC. Not everyone can afford an Xbox One X. When you look at that as well, mobile becomes more and more accessible. Then again, phone prices are about as much as the consoles nowadays anyway. So it is going to be interesting to watch and see how it all develops, but I do like the idea that it's open to anyone, and I feel like that almost makes it a little bit more accessible as an esport. I still don't think it does well viewership-wise, but if you're looking at sponsors and having more casual players buy into a tournament that's sponsored, I think sponsors can look at this as a positive note.
Okay, so I'm going to play a little devil's advocate. I mean, obviously, I knew going into this we're going to be on two different sides here. What mobile title, Joey, do you feel has made it as an esport?
I don't think anyone, and yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't think the current model that they all went with is going to work. I don't think if I have the choice of tuning into a Vainglory PC game or a Vainglory mobile game, mm-hmm, I'm always going to choose the PC version. It's higher level mechanics. But if I'm given the choice to compete in a tournament, I also know I'm not good enough to compete in that PC tournament. Mm-hmm. But on a mobile, if it's just pick it up and play for a weekend with friends, I'm definitely more likely to buy into that. And as a sponsor, I can also realize how many people that's going to reach. I might not be pulling in the viewership numbers, but I will be pulling in the player numbers to see my sponsorship. So I think there's an advantage to it. I don't know if it's going to take off extremely well, but I do like this different approach. It's something new. It's something unique, something that we haven't really seen taken off as much before.
Yeah, and I feel like I totally get where you're coming from, and having it be accessible to practically everyone with a mobile phone that can play these games on it. I just really don't see the gaming community taking it that seriously. Like Vainglory, okay, I get it. It's moving to PC. It's fine. That's great. You know, that's going to develop it as a title even more. You know, would League of Legends be as popular as it is today if it was a mobile game, then try to switch over to PC to try to become a legitimate esport title? Would Overwatch have that same kind of following if it was, it's a game that's practically open to everyone who wants to buy it. Same thing with League of Legends and Apex and all these other titles that are coming up here. It's available to everyone, just restricted on platforms. What if, I don't know. I feel like I'm going around in circles with my argument, but
I think it takes the right title as well. You're saying, like Vainglory, I think takes too long if you're going to look at doing the main version. PUBG, I feel like takes too long. I think something like a Clash Royale could do well in this, but again, you don't want to do a full league out format.
Yeah.
It looks obnoxious to watch someone up at a podium tapping on a little screen. It doesn't work. But if it's me and you playing maybe twos in a tournament on a Saturday, and our call time is 1 p.m. or whatever, we go, we play our match. If we keep going, we keep moving on. I don't know. It's kind of like Clash for League of Legends in a sense. It allows that prize for a more casual player, but at the same point, it does give you that competitive edge. So I don't know. I could see it doing well. At the same point, I do not agree with these titles. I do not think these titles are that fun to play or watch in this sense. So in that sense, I really don't see it taking off. But if you pick the right titles, I could see it doing well.
I just don't see where the money is going to come from. I don't see any sponsors opening up their bank accounts and say, hey, look, cool, awesome. You know, this has an 8 million, player you know, base, or you know, there's 8 million players that play this game, but 0.002% are competing at a high level. Like, that just, to me as an investor, it's like, well, you know, where's my return on money here? Where's my return on this investment? I just really don't see that in the mobile market the way it's currently structured. And titles do play a huge role in that, but just the way it currently is structured and how it's been such a roller coaster that's had more lows than even highs or even mediums in anywhere in esports, I just really don't see how this is going to be viable long term outside of just this ESL Mobile Open.
I think part of the problem is you're thinking of it like a traditional esport as well. Think of it more like a gaming competition. Like, if it's just something where you play, just jump into a competition and just play it. It has no purpose of having these crazy viewership numbers or anything like that. It's purely just to play with fans. I mean, you see so many casual level tournaments do so well in this area and pull in sponsors. You look at a Battlefy, you look at a Smash.gg. A lot of the tournaments on there end up pulling in sponsors. Half of them aren't even streamed or are streamed just casually. But it's the fact that they pull in so many players that the sponsors get that recognition. So it's almost like the sponsors are buying into the number of players as opposed to the number of viewers, if that makes sense. At least that's the way I'm seeing it.
Yeah, it totally makes sense, and I get it. I don't know. I'm gonna go ahead and say I'm not a huge fan of it, more than just the titles, but I will be more than happy to sit back, take a look how the scene develops, and then if I'm wrong, I'll be more than happy to admit it. But I'm just very hesitant when it comes to mobile gaming being anything more than just casual play.
Yeah, and I totally agree with you as far as professional esports. So I feel like this is that hybrid right between where we're thinking, and I'm curious to see how it does. ESPN has announced a partnership with collegiate esports tournament organizer TESPA to hold the ESPN Collegiate Esports Championships, known as the CEC. The event will be held from May 10th to the 12th in Houston, Texas, at the George R. Brown Convention Center. John, the games for this particular competition will include Overwatch, Hearthstone, Heroes of the Storm, StarCraft II, and Street Fighter V. The tournament will broadcast the semifinal and title matches of those titles. I'm very curious what your thoughts are as far as the games they chose here. One, Hearthstone has seeming to be struggling lately as an esport. In addition to that, Heroes of the Storm is no longer supported from Blizzard as an esport either. So I'm curious to see that the fact that Heroes of the Dorm is still carrying on in this aspect.
Yeah, this move by ESPN just is a very ESPN move. From someone who's watched ESPN a lot and seen how that organization just seems to have gone kind of downhill over the past 7 years, picking a title like Heroes of the Storm that is no longer being actively developed or supported by the developer of the game, it's essentially dead in the water. Why? Is there a community that still plays the game? Absolutely. Is ESPN grabbing this game when the community is dire for a structured a tournament centered around this title? Absolutely. Is this going to be a one and done? Probably, because if a developer isn't supporting the game anymore, what happens when the game breaks? What happens when there's bugs that come along? Or what happens when your system can't run it anymore? You know, there's so many questions, you know, with some of these titles. Overwatch, okay, that's fine. I'm fine with that. StarCraft 2 has seen a resurgence in a lot of its gameplay, but still, you know, it still struggles a little bit. And Street Fighter 5, you know, I'm all for fighting games. They're great. You know, that community, while a very solid community, you know, Joey, we went to the Red Bull event here in D.C. You could probably count in the low 200s, the amount of people all 3 days that attended that thing in person. And I feel like that would be just a little generous. But, you know, I just don't feel like there's enough pull there to really include a Street Fighter V title into ESPN's tournament version of the collegiate esports scene, especially on the college level. I don't know. I feel like they could have gone with better titles here. And Joey, I think that's what you're trying to hammer there. And the titles themselves, I'm not a huge fan of outside of Overwatch and StarCraft 2. I think the other three titles, Hearthstone's been struggling, and Heroes of the Storm, not even being supported anymore. And Street Fighter 5, yeah, there's a great community center around fighting games, but when you compare it to Overwatch and even Hearthstone, I feel like, you know, those are two that really, you know, overshadow Street Fighter.
Yeah, I'm okay with Overwatch. I'm also okay with Street Fighter, to be completely honest. I think it has a decent collegiate scene, and it does pull in streaming numbers, at least. The in-person audience here in DC wasn't the greatest, but yeah, streaming numbers, it usually still does okay. And just to clarify, Heroes of the Storm is still supported by Blizzard. The esports scene is not, though. So the game does still have a development team fixing those bugs, but they do not have an esports team that organizes competitions and tournaments for that particular aspect. So I am curious. Like you said, John, I think the titles are my biggest question mark here. StarCraft II in particular really sticks out to me alongside Heroes of the Storm. I don't see either one of them pulling in crazy viewership numbers at a collegiate level. And I think there are better titles out there. Rocket League is one that's so accessible and so easy for people to understand. I'm really surprised we don't see something like Rocket League here. I feel like that would be the perfect title for ESPN to bring those traditional sports viewers in, as well as a very casual title and such an easy title for people to buy into at a collegiate level. You only need three players. You don't need five high ELO level players like a League of Legends does. It's simply three players. Work them together, figure things out. And I don't want to say a casual player can play Rocket League because there is a different level there. Obviously, the flying definitely increases as you go up the tiers and the ability to control the ball at higher levels. But at the same point, Rocket League is just such an accessible title. I would love to see that included in here. But I am excited to see ESPN going the direction of college esports. I'm excited to see more and more competitions live on the TV as well.
Yeah, and just to touch on that, and I do apologize if I came across saying that Blizzard is not supporting it, the game period anymore, just the esports scene. So thank you, Joey, for that clarification. But when it comes to the bugs and the exploits kind of thing, is when you don't support it as an esport title, you no longer are looking at it from an ultra competitive standpoint, kind of like how League of Legends make those changes on a bi-weekly basis in regards to what changes can be made in the community. But there's also that hyper focus on the competitive scene also for the higher elos. So that's my biggest concern with Heroes of the Storm going forward, not being supported as an esport entity anymore, is those changes that, are we going to see a possible decrease in play because we're not looking at that higher echelon anymore? We're just looking at it overall as a just a generic game that you play with your friends on weekends kind of thing.
Red Bull officially sponsors the LEC and commits to helping develop competitive amateur events across Europe as well. John, this is another big move. Energy drinks are one of the most prominent sponsors in esports and have been for years. Red Bull and Monster obviously being two of the bigger ones. G Fuel is another one that usually buys in and sponsors a lot of streamers. Red Bull now completely buying into the LEC as the official energy drink supplier. The LEC has looked great in its debut, and I think Red Bull is getting in at the perfect time.
Yeah, and Red Bull is one of those organizations that have kind of really hit home with everything they've done in esports, whether it's sponsoring a team, sponsoring a league, or helping tournaments grow. Red Bull really understands what they're about. They're about extreme sports, they're about video games, they're about a certain kind of active and extreme lifestyle, and they know what they're doing, and I think this move to become the official drink sponsor and everything else they're doing, I think that's absolutely perfect. And really hits home with Red Bull and what they stand for, what message they're trying to push going into esports, expanding their reach also. So I absolutely love, I can't think of one thing Red Bull's done that I don't like when it comes to esports. So kudos to them for expanding their reach.
Yeah, most definitely. And I feel like Red Bull and Monster have both done a very good job, but Red Bull, I think, really winning the upper hand here with the LEC sponsorship, as I feel like there's so much money to be had in the LEC right now. But on top of that, John, I do want to break it down. The fact that they will be doing events across Europe, I think that's huge as well. We've already seen them do, I feel like, a lot of major events in Germany, but I'd love to see them do more in France, in Spain, and to continue expanding, continue to build that up. And Red Bull also has its own esports teams in different regions, in different games, different titles. So continuing to see them build upon that, continue to build Europe up as a region. Europe's viewership numbers have not hit what we've seen in NA so far for a lot of the big major titles. League of Legends, CSGO, it does beat it out. Russia pulls in some crazy big CSGO numbers. But overall, for a lot of the titles, it seems to lack behind Asia and lack behind North America. So a big brand like Red Bull continuing to expand and continuing to build upon what is already built there as a foundation, I think can really continue to strengthen esports viewership numbers in Europe. And sticking with Red Bull, they've announced the expansion of their esports team in partnership with G2 for the F1 Esports Pro Series. So what will this mean, guys? The roster will take on the Red Bull Esports name. So it's going to be under Red Bull Racing. And on top of that, we'll also be comprised of G2 esports players that were formerly on a G2 roster for Formula One. So this is where the whole partnership comes into play. G2 says, hey, we like these players, but we're not staying in the scene. Red Bull is coming in, swooping those players up, but keeping G2 on the side. It's kind of like an analyst, is kind of someone who's been around in esports. I would liken this a lot to what Fnatic does with Roma in FIFA, where the Roma organization technically owns the players, but Fnatic is branded on their jerseys as well as they help with the esports infrastructure aspect. I think that's what we see happening here as well. Anything else on F1 esports, John?
It's better than NASCAR esports because they make more than just left turns.
I will give you that. So. It's definitely more exciting to watch as a viewer as well.
Absolutely.
I can't say I've tuned in, but I have seen regular F1 racing. And the fact there's more turns, there's more really scenery is big for me. The fact that I have to see a big concrete bowl in NASCAR compared to like trees and lakes and rivers and different things, it's like a lot more aesthetically pleasing to watch, and it keeps me more in tune.
And not to mention F1 is approximately 475 laps shorter than NASCAR. That is quite nice too.
Sticking with that, though, we have two-time Formula One champion Fernando Alonso also buying into esports, launching a new team in partnership with Logitech. So that's a big move as well, John. Logitech always making waves in esports. Now you have a huge racer buying in as well. And the biggest thing for me to take out of this is the fact that we continue to see racing join up and continue to grow in the esports scene. It feels like NASCAR is not going to quite take off, but F1 continues to pull in bigger and bigger names.
F1 pretty much does everything NASCAR wishes they could do. They're great with their fans. They're great with their community. They understand what their fans want. Now they're expanding into esports. The drivers are supporting it. How many NASCAR drivers have you heard come out and support NASCAR esports? One, maybe two. But F1, they're all in. And a lot of the organizations that sponsor F1 racing are already in esports. So it's almost like a smooth transition for a lot of these people to really throw their hat in the ring for F1 esports going forward. And it's really cool when you have, you know, a two-time champ throwing his hat into the ring as well and teaming up with a major name like Logitech. That just goes to show you that, you know, F1 has always been kind of that racing body that worldwide has that audience, that has that passion that people enjoy watching, where NASCAR in the last 15, 20 years, the trends are going downwards for it, and they're kind of like they're behind the ball trying to catch back up, but they still don't understand. They can't capture what F1 has to relate that passion into other ventures like esports.
Yeah, and I can't find the exact name of the team. I don't know if it's been announced yet. But in defense of NASCAR, John, neither one of us watch NASCAR enough or follow the drivers enough to know if they talk about esports in general. But we're just assuming on this part.
I feel like we research esports enough on a daily basis that if they did say anything, we would. Joey, we talked about Ninja's gaming underwear on this show. Gaming underwear. I have a feeling we would know if a NASCAR driver said something about esports.
Okay, I'll give you that. I will give
just
you that.
Just saying.
I will give you that, at least for now. But I do have to mention the titles they will be competing in. Again, we don't 100% know the team name. I have the link to the article there, John, if you want to give it a gander, but I haven't found it yet. They will be competing in a variety of virtual titles here. iRacing, R-Factor 2, Dirt Rally 2.0, Project Cars 2, and Gran Turismo. So quite a few different titles coming out of here. It seems like they're going to be a very race-heavy organization, and I do kind of like that approach, to be completely honest. They're not trying to bite more than they can chew. They're based out of that whole racing scene in general. They know that scene well, and they know what the esports scene looks like, as Alonso has worked with G2 in this scene before. And they're not trying to buy into those League of Legends, that CSGO, into all these different titles they really don't know much about. So I'm really respecting the fact they're specializing themselves here. Any luck on that title?
Nope.
Yeah, so we'll have to wait. We'll call Alonso. We'll talk to his agent and see what that's going to be. And get back to you guys on that one. For now, let's head on into our other news section. U.S. Soccer is on the hunt to form its first e-national team for the FIFA E-Nations Cup in April. The E-Nations Cup will see teams from all six of FIFA's regional confederations converge in London from the 13th to the 14th of April. They will join 20 different nations in this competition, John. That's a pretty good-sized competition here for the E-Nations Cup. They'll be competing for the title of world championship, or the world champion, and a $100,000 prize pool. The first team will be selected through the 2019 EMLS Cup, for the United States, and that will determine who is going to represent them as the winner and runner-up will be chosen. So a lot of different things going on with that 2019 EMLS Cup here, which is going to come out at the end of March. There's a lot on the line, John. Not only are you winning the prize money and the EMLS Cup, but you have a chance at representing your national team as well.
Yeah, and this is great. I love this move by the U.S. Soccer Federation. My only concern is that it's going to be operated by the U.S. Soccer Federation. That's kind of like esports and the NCAA. It terrifies me because it's an organization that is very... Joey, I want to have a nice word to describe the U.S. Soccer Federation.
Let's say interesting.
We'll go with very
unique.
Unique, interesting. I was thinking more along the lines of like hard-headed, but we'll go with interesting.
Yeah, let's keep it soft.
Soft-headed. It's very interesting. They're kind of right there with Major League Baseball venturing into esports right now, kind of what feels like is a little late. But I feel like the U.S. Soccer Federation, if they play it right, if they actually take this serious and they, you know, get advice from people in the esports scene, they bring people in that understand what's going on, they study the EMLS, they study other leagues around the United States and around the world and how this is supposed to operate and how, you know, this really can be a huge thing for them. I feel like if they really take it seriously and they bring in that outside consulting, which they really, really need to do, I feel like it can really be successful. Will the U.S. Soccer Federation do that? Probably not. They're probably going to try to run it on their own from their little house in Chicago, where everything is based out of, it feels like. And that terrifies me because I feel like they're going to squander an amazing opportunity, and I want them to succeed. I really, really do, because I feel like this would be awesome for a bridge between traditional soccer fans and esport fans. I feel like this would be a major, major opportunity, because while soccer may not be like the number one sport in the USA, when the U.S. men's national team is in town, no matter what city they're in, that game is sold out. There are fans in the streets, people flying from all over the country to see their games. It is absolutely packed. We travel incredibly well when the U.S. team actually makes the World Cup. You know, it's really, really awesome, the fans that are there. And a lot of the fans are seeing this crossover with esports with their local MLS teams or their teams that they cheer for around the world, bringing teams into their esport divisions as well. This is a major opportunity here, and I really want them to succeed. I love it. I'm going to be following it like crazy. I'm a big soccer fan, and I love FIFA esports. Huge opportunity here, and I really, 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 really hope they don't screw it up.
Honestly, I think it's going to be too hard for them to screw up with this particular format. The fact that they are pretty much taking the winner and runner-up from the MLS Cup, I think, is going to be enough. The fact that these players have been around, they've been in the organization and the flow of things for FIFA in the nation, in really the national scene, in a sense, with the MLS running that. And the fact that these players have seen how these competitions go, they've been in a flow of how they represent their certain clubs and organizations. And I really think the U.S. national team just comes in here and scoops them up. They're like, okay, winner, runner up, you guys know how things are done. Let us know how they're supposed to be. I really think it's as simple as that. I think with them just choosing a winner as opposed to just trying to pick out players, we've already seen they struggle with picking out players from a national team perspective. I think you choose the winner here and the runner-up, this is the way to go. It's clean cut. The choice is pretty much made for you in this sense, so I really like that, and I think it really reduces the chance of error.
Yeah, and I feel like selecting the players wouldn't be the issue here, just managing what they can and can't do. I feel like, you know...
Oh, I think selecting them would be a huge issue.
Well, no, it would be, but having them, yeah, you know, pick the first and second place player from the EMLS Cup, I feel like that would be, you know, that's essentially handed to them. But what comes after that, that's what terrifies me. You know, how are they going to use them to advertise esports in the U.S. In the U.S. Soccer Federation? How are they going to, you know, are they going to put limitations on when, like, what they can stream, sponsors and whatnot, like? The biggest thing is, like, when you see players on a traditional soccer team get called up to a men's national team, you know, they have their own personal sponsorships also, but then when they go to the men's national team, they have their own sponsorships, and same thing with the club. Like, there's a balancing act they have to do. Are they going to be able to allow that balancing act that these players need to do, need to perform with? Are they going to allow that? Are they going to be allowed to talk about their club teams, shout out sponsors and everything else on their streams once they get called up, if you will, to the U.S. soccer e-sport team or whatever? That's where I'm more concerned about, is what happens after that first and second place player comes to the U.S. Soccer Federation. What kind of limitations would be put on them going forward?
And I definitely share that doubt, but at the same point, I can easily ease your mind on this one.
Do it.
They are only being called up for an event 2 weeks after the championship or the cup.
Okay. That's
so true. It's not going to be a permanent move, at least for now, from what they've said. It easily could turn into a permanent move where those questions come into account, really, I guess we can say. But for the next 2 weeks, there's only going to be so much time between the MLS Cup and then the actual competition with the Nations Cup, so... Overall, I don't think there's going to be enough time to address all that stuff. I think it'll be more keep things going as they are, maybe throw this extra sponsor, maybe an extra tweet or so here and there. But then from there, they'll just play the competition. So at least for this one, I don't think we'll get those questions answered yet, but probably further down the road, they will definitely come into view.
I feel better already.
That's what I'm here for, John. In addition to the U.S., the other teams playing in the competition are Argentina, Australia, Brazil, the People's Republic of China, Denmark, England, Finland, France, Germany, Mexico, the Netherlands, New Zealand, Norway, Portugal, Saudi Arabia, South Africa, Spain, Sweden, and Russia. So those are all the teams competing in the FIFA eNations Cup for 2019 in April. And what did I say it was, the 13th through the 14th?
Yes.
Yes, 13th to the 14th in London.
So congratulations so I'm excited, to South
John.
Korea.
Oh my gosh. They're actually,
They're not in. So congratulations to Germany.
Yeah, there you go. Wow. So this will be an esports competition not won by South Korea. This will definitely be a different change of events here. But overall, John, I'm excited. You and I both love the national team as far as soccer goes. We don't always agree with the call-ups. We don't usually agree with the call-ups. But at the same time, we love representing the team. And I'm excited to do the same thing here. I'm hoping to see our boy Renato from D.C. representing for the nation.
Oh, we're not homers, though. Totally not homers. Renato, get that call-up. That's what I'm talking about.
Moving on to Becker College in Massachusetts. They have become the first to offer an Apex Legends scholarship in partnership with Helix Esports and Team Genji. The scholarship will be worth $5,000 per player. So, John, I really like this move. Again, I think this is a very smart move by Becker. Apex doing extremely well in its first about month and a half so far since release. Now they're already offering scholarships. The first college, at least worldwide, to my knowledge, to do so. So I think they're buying into the hype train. $5,000 is not a crazy investment to do that, and I really like this move from Becker.
$5,000 for in-state tuition is a lot, but out-of-state tuition, definitely not. No, that's cool. That's awesome. That's great. Becker's probably a private college now that I'm really thinking about it. But
oh, it definitely is.
But $5,000 is still $5,000. That's $5,000 less in debt that you're going to be when you get out of college. That's awesome. That's great. I love the fact that Apex is already pulling in scholarships for colleges with this title. It just goes to show you the power of Apex and what it really is doing to the Battle Royale and gaming and esports scene, really.
Darn, I actually can't find it. I don't know if it's private or not, actually. I'm assuming it is, but
it sounds like it's a private college.
It definitely sounds like it's a private college. So we will assume it's private until someone corrects us or until one of us gets a scholarship to go back to school and play Apex. But for now, let's take our move on. We're going to actually talk Apex some more because the Apex Season 1 Wild Frontier Pass is now available as of tomorrow. So almost available, guys. John, what are your thoughts on this initial battle pass? It's going to come out as 950 Apex coin for the initial pass. But you can also bundle it up and get the pass plus the first 25 levels for 2,800 coins. Overall, the battle pass is going to include skins. It's going to include Apex packs, different titles to track your stats. Overall, is this going to be worth the investment to you?
Sure. Why not? I plan on buying it. I mean, it's going to work. It's worked for Rocket League. It's worked for Fortnite. It's worked for almost every title that's implemented a battle pass. Whether people think the rewards are good or not, people still do it. There's a free version of it, and then there's a paid version for it. So really, it comes down to how much do you want out of this game. There's been plenty of times where I thought some of the rewards in Rocket League for the battle pass there, or the Rocket Pass, if you will, I thought I was like, oh, I'm not really excited about this, or oh, I really don't like this, you know, season car that they're using. I don't like what, you know, the third stage of this car's evolution is going to be. It's like, oh, this goal celebration, you know, this goal explosion, eh, it's okay. Same thing with Fortnite. It's like, oh, some of these skins are okay. I'm not really thrilled about this. It's like, oh, look, another axe skin that I'm not going to use because I don't care what my axe looks like. You know, it. that's what it comes down to is... If you're invested in the game, if it's a game that you enjoy playing and you want the opportunity to get more skins and different in-game content, then yes, you're going to pay for it. It makes sense to because it's, you know, $10 for a battle pass was essentially what 950 in-game coins cost, or it's $10 per skin that you want to buy. So at the end of the day, the bang for your buck is there. But again, you have to be invested in the game. You know, if you're only going to play the game two or three times during the season, it's not worth investing your money in. But if it's a game that you actually care about and you play on a consistent basis, I think it's worth your money.
Yeah, I'm kind of right there along with you, to be completely honest. I feel like a lot of people are taking very negative reactions to it on social media. A lot of people are not happy with what has been shown so far, as well as the pricing format, in particular for the 25 level unlock. But overall, I'm like you. If you're going to play the game, this is another way to get more rewards in doing so. In a sense, you're paying $10, but you're going to get a lot of skin content out of it, as well as Apex packs to unlock different things, emotes, banners, Apex packs, different stat trackers if you're really into all of that customization. So I think there is definitely worth behind it. At the same point, I'm interested to see how Season 1 develops into Season 2. In particular, there's a lot of negative feedback coming out, and I'm wondering if the developer, if Respawn, actually looks at this stuff and is like, how can we adapt this battle pass to be more positive, or do we keep trucking along the way we are? I mean, the game in and of itself is doing incredibly well, so it really doesn't even need a battle pass, but I think this is going to be quite a revenue producer, as even a lot of these people saying negative things about it, I'm almost 90% sure are going to buy in anyway.
Oh, they absolutely will, and these are probably the same people that get mad when you ping a Mozambique when you run past it. You know, if it happens, it happens. You know, if you like it, awesome. You don't like it, don't pay for season two. It's a free game. At the end of the day, you're there to play the game. If the in-game skins really mean that much to you, that you're ticked off that the season one battle pass, their first attempt at this, is so bad you're going to quit the game, then you weren't really a fan of the game to begin with. You know, you don't let skins and in-game items that don't affect how the game is played ruin the game for you. It just doesn't make sense. That'd be like me saying, oh, I don't like the new skin Tom Kench got in League of Legends, so I'm going to quit League of Legends. No, you have other options out there. You don't have to pick that skin. You can pick a different skin. You don't have to wear a skin. You can wear the basic skin and be called a normie or a filthy casual or whatever. It doesn't matter. It doesn't affect the way the game is played. It's in there for added content. So, you know, people that are being incredibly critical of it, don't buy it. I dare you not to buy it. And when you do end up buying it, you're welcome.
So, John, will you be buying the battle pass?
I will be buying
one?
Yeah, absolutely. I said at the beginning of the segment, absolutely, I'll be buying it. Shout out to Twitch chat for pinging the Mozambique here. I do appreciate that reference there. And Joey, it is a private school. We're going to segue back. Private school. So we had the our intuition was correct. Private school for Becker College for that first Apex scholarship. But yes, I will be buying the battle pass tomorrow.
Perfect. Now that information is public about the private school, good times there. I will be purchasing it as well, but I will be going with the $950 one. I will be going with the $10 pass. Will you be going all in for the $25?
I have to go back and take a look at the big difference between the two. I can definitely say yes to the $10 pass, the 950 coins. I don't know on the $25 one yet. I want to do some more research on it first, but I would consider it.
Yeah, I think it's probably best to not do that. But that's just my personal opinion. I think we'll play enough Apex together and with the OTN community that it'll make it worth it just to buy the lower one. But if you feel like you need that extra 25 boost, it's not a bad deal. Or maybe it is. We'll have to check it out. But for now, we're going to move on to Xbox. Xbox is this is amazing. Halo the Master Chief Collection is coming to PC. This was trending worldwide when the announcement was made. It was like number one or number two in the world on tweets. It will include Halo Reach Remastered, which is also a big addition as well. This is believe it was the fifth Halo game. Don't quote me on that one. But it's going to be remastered. It's going to look great. And not only is it going to look great on Xbox, it's going to look even better on PC with the graphic capabilities there. It's going to include the campaign, multiplayer, and firefight game mode, which, John, I don't know if you ever played that. It's kind of like a PvE aspect. So a bunch of players get together. It's almost like a horde mode, in a sense, for Gears of War. It'll be title-by-title rollout, so you're going to see Halo 1, Halo 2, Halo 3. It'll be out title-by-title, not just one huge collection altogether. And it will include a custom games browser as well. This, to me, is the start of a new era, in a sense. This is Microsoft saying, we are stuck to this. We are going to continue to develop for Xbox and PC. It might come back to bite them in the butt later down the road, but at least for now, they are committed to it. They want to bring these games to all of the gamers that they can, at least within their current ecosystem. So they're going to continue to expand this, and this is a huge, huge addition, seeing Halo come to PC. And John, I think I'm going to buy this.
Yeah, I'm going to be right there with you. When Halo was massive, was, still is, but when the titles were rolling out and it was at its peak of its popularity, as a PlayStation fanboy, the one and only game that really, like, made me ever consider buying an Xbox, the one game that someone could dangle in front of my face and say, hey, you really want an Xbox right now, don't you, was Halo, and every single Halo title. I hated the fact that I had to go over to my friends' places to play Halo. I hated that, you know, in college, you know, I had to see if someone had a free controller on their Xbox that I could play. Yeah, it's just one of those things where it's like I wanted an Xbox because I wanted to play Halo. Wasn't good enough, you know. I mean, it wasn't good enough. It's a great game, but it wasn't enough to make me buy an Xbox. But the fact that's coming to PC, you bet your tush, I am getting, Halo when it comes to PC. Absolutely.
I mean, I can't even imagine the amount of time I've put into Halo. Like, the only other game that's probably surpassed Halo for me is probably, well, who knows, League of Legends could be up there now. But I was going to say Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare definitely got the most of my time on console. But Halo, at least Halo 3, was right there with it. I mean, the ability to, the custom game modes in general were amazing. I mean, that's where zombies really made its big thing in Halo. We also had Griffball. Griffball was freaking
love
amazing. Do you ever play Griffball?
Oh my gosh. So good.
It's just such a good custom game mode, and it would make for such like a good OTN community game night, or even like a fun tournament. Like if someone like a Red Bull wants to just sponsor a Griffball tournament, I would be all in to watch something like that. It is such a fun game mode. But on top of that, just the multiplayer maps, these were some of the most balanced maps in my humble opinion in esports, at least for console shooters, especially with FPS being the big genre at that time. They were just so well balanced, in my opinion, and the guns were great. There was so much fun customization with them as far as just the difference of an energy sword versus a grenade launcher versus the AR and just choosing which rifle you go with in certain situations and just the team flow. And Oddball, everyone hated Oddball, but I freaking loved Oddball, holding onto the skull and letting the counter clock up and just passing it around with your teammate at the right time. Just Halo had so many good game modes, and a lot of these game modes we really haven't seen translated to many, many games since then. I believe Quake has picked some of them up. We've seen a few of them go to like a Call of Duty, but overall, there are so many good game modes in Halo, and I really think it almost sees a second coming on the PC. I'm so excited. And we're going to get a new Halo game in like 2020 or 2021 as well. Woot, woot. In addition to that, Xbox has officially unveiled that Xbox Live support will be on Android and iOS as well. Though it was rumored to come to the Switch, it has not been announced yet. In my humble opinion, John, it is still coming to Nintendo Switch as Xbox Live. I don't think there was a fallout there. I think we're waiting for a big announcement on E3 stage. I mean, the biggest thing for me with this whole Xbox Live thing, I really like the move to expand it to new platforms, but they've got to fix things before they keep moving it on. It's almost like Pokemon Go all over again. Xbox Live works extremely well on the Xbox, in my humble opinion. But overall, you look at PC, you look at the Windows Store, good gosh, downloading something in the Windows Store, I feel like you have to multiply it by 5 times the amount it should take. And they need to redo that. They need to redo the Xbox app as well, both the beta and the normal one. Neither one works that effectively for PC players connecting with Xbox players. And if I'm a PC player, I'm just going to go straight to Discord. Why do I want to go through Xbox Live to make my life more difficult? If I'm just playing with Xbox guys, maybe I even make them come on Discord as well. So overall, they need to address these issues that are already out there. as they expand to mobile platforms, as they expand to PC, as they continue to solidify. We need to see what they promised last year at E3. There, I think it was actually at EXO in New Mexico. Mexico City. They need to continue to expand on that. They need to continue to refine it. We need to see a clean-cut Xbox Live platform for mobile and PC before we can really buy into it.
And just shout-out to Squirrelsoul, because he's been killing it in chat today. The Halo Master Chief Collection is going to be available on Steam. So it's right. not just going to be the Xbox store, but it's going to be on Steam, which, you know, as critical as we are about the Xbox app on PC and how broken and just terrible it is, the fact that it's going to be on Steam is awesome. That makes me even more excited that I can use Steam to get it versus Xbox. So I'm even more pumped for that.
No, most definitely. And I think that's actually what you're going to see with all of the Xbox releases. Even Gears of War 5, when it eventually comes out, I think they could put it on Steam as well. I mean, why not? If you really are all about getting the games to everyone you can, might as well throw them up on these other stores at this point as well. Microsoft has way more than enough money to do whatever they want. They don't need everything to go through the Windows Store. So as they continue to build this ecosystem with this new approach, I think we do see more things in Steam as well. Hey, John, that's enough Xbox talk for you today.
Oh, thank you.
Let's move on to a little Dota talk with Auto Chess going mobile with a $1.5 million league announced. Have you had a chance to play Auto Chess yet?
No. And nor do I want to.
Okay, Auto Chess is amazing. I am not a Dota fan, but this is one heck of a great mod. And the biggest thing with Auto Chess, in my opinion, John, with it going mobile, I think we actually see it compete with titles like Hearthstone, like Magic. We see it compete really with the card collector games, in my opinion. What do you think?
Yeah, well, I mean, you already know my opinion on a lot of card collector games. I don't watch them. I find them incredibly boring. I find chess in itself boring, so why am I going to watch a...
Did you ever play Legion TD?
No.
It was like a Warcraft 3 mod?
No, I didn't play that one, no.
Okay, so it's like tower defense. It's kind of the same thing here with auto chess. You're kind of setting up your board to play against another team's board. It's very different than chess. We'll have to play it sometime, but it's more enjoyable than chess. It's more enjoyable to watch. I've actually watched a few streamers play this, which I do not enjoy watching the card game streamers very much, like the Hearthstone, but I did enjoy this, so maybe you will as well.
Oh, I don't know.
Gosh, we are running kind of long in this episode. Next topic, The Simpsons. They have aired an esports episode titled E-My Sports this past Sunday. John, you actually got to watch this. I did not yet. What were your thoughts on it?
I thought it was so bad. Every cliche about gamers and esport athletes, if you will, was nailed in this episode. And to think that they even reached out to people from Riot Games when they were making this episode. Like, look, I will poke fun at the esport and gaming community. That's completely fine. But it was borderline cringy. And they played on every stereotype possible from, you know, oh, Bart was playing this game so long that he was shaving at his computer because he grew facial hair. And he has the wrappers of chip bags and candy and everything laid out all over his desk and empty cans and you know, of Red Bull and whatnot. And then, oh, his team started from a high school, works his way all the way up. Oh, then they guess what? They got to go to the World Championships. Joey, where was the World Championships? You didn't even see the episode, but where was it?
It had to be South Korea.
South Korea! Oh, my goodness. We hit another one. So we go to South Korea, and then what happens? Oh, spoiler alert, by the way. I'm totally going to ruin this episode. They go to South Korea, and Lisa, being the goody-two-shoes that she is, convinces Homer, who happens to become the esport coach for Bart's high school team because he realized how much money was involved. There you go. Another thing. Kids realizing how much money is in esports. Parents not having a clue. But when soon as they do, they're like, oh, yeah, this is great. I want a piece of the pie. They go to South Korea. Lisa teaches Homer Zen Buddhism and how to achieve Zen. And then Homer goes on this absurd destroy everything that is good kind of thing and literally pulls the plug at the esport competition, the outdoor arena, and everyone riots because that's what esport fans do. We riot and we get violent when our games don't work. That makes complete sense. And the outro was the MASH theme song, which is a really incredibly old TV show series that I had to Wikipedia to figure out here. was based on the Korean War, apparently. So there you go. There's another stereotype that was thrown in. I thought it was mediocre at best. I give it a solid 4 out of 10. Not the best from The Simpsons and not the best esport parody out there. I think Make Love Not Warcraft from South Park did a better job, everything esport, everything gaming, in that one episode than The Simpsons could ever do going forward. Done.
Wow, listeners, look, you don't even have to watch it because John summed it all up for you.
It was so, I was so disappointed. Oh.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of potential there. I've seen a lot of mixed reviews. Some people hate it. Some people love it. I have not watched it, so I can really only go off what John said. It sounds like they did hit quite a few stereotypes, but that's a lot what we see with these comedies anyway. A lot of people try to poke at those stereotypes, and it seems like they poked John pretty well for this one.
Well, no, like, if you're going to poke it like South Park did. Go above and beyond. Like, Cartman gaming so much that he got even fatter. His hygiene went incredibly downhill. And all the way to the point where his mom is bringing a hospital pan for him to use the restroom in because he's too lazy to move away from his computer. That's funny. Like, to me, I'm laughing hysterically when I see that. Seeing Bart with an empty can of Red Bull and chips and whatever, that's just like, okay, we kind of know that. Make it something even bigger. Exaggerate it. Make it funny. And it wasn't. It was just, eh.
Yeah, I can agree with you on that one for sure. Okay, again, we're running toward the end here, so we're going to roll through some of this stuff quickly. Speaking of rolls, Snoop Dogg and his weed brand are launching an esports that worked way too well. An esports tournament series called the Gangsta Gaming League, the GGL for short, starting with Madden. According to Slasher, Snoop did something very similar 12 years ago with the Hip Hop Gaming League run by Global Gaming League. John, do you see the GGL taking off here with the Gangsta Gaming League led by Snoop?
The fact you were able to Joey pun that transition has me absolutely destroyed right now. Look, I forgot Madden even had a scene. It's not a, you know, again, dedicated fan group. I know there's tournaments all over North America, but it's one of those things where you just really, you don't hear about it that often. And now Snoop Dogg is coming into Madden and making the Gangsta Gaming League. I don't see it working. I really don't. It's Snoop Dogg, first off. Is that man ever, like, is he not high, you know, ever? Like, how is he going to make a business decision? Like, don't get me wrong. His rap, amazing. He can spit it like the best of the MCs out there. Completely fine with that. But, Gangsta Gaming League? That is one where I'm going to pass the joint to the next person.
Oh, hey, yo. And with that, we will pass our way to Call of Duty here. Activision Blizzard is looking to sell Call of Duty franchise spots at $25 million per team for the new city-based league. That'll look similar to the Overwatch League, according to a new report from Jacob Wolf. So the big thing here, John, is not only the fact that it's going to be city-based, but I think the fact that Call of Duty is looking for $25 million. Again, this goes back to the Overwatch League for me as well. People are investing all of this money into the Overwatch League when you paid $10 million to get into the League of Legends scene that is continuing to upstage it as far as viewers, continue to upstage it as far as merchandise and sales. So for me, I think I can justify Overwatch League a lot easier than I can justify Call of Duty. The main reason being is because the title switches so often in Call of Duty. Every 2 years, you're competing on a new title and you have to redo your roster. You have to rebuild these players. Some transfer over, some do not. And with different developers being involved, it's hard for a Call of Duty pro to just buy right into a new title. They can purchase it, but buying into the new skill set, the new weapons, and everything definitely takes time to transition, and it's cleaner for some players than others. So for me, because of the longevity of the title itself, I don't really know if I can justify $25 million here for a Call of Duty spot.
I can't justify $25 million for Call of Duty, period. Like you said, there's this too much. There's too much unknown with this title. It's not Overwatch where it's a stable title that has changes to the meta every now and then. It's not a League of Legends where it's a stable title that has changes to the meta every 2 weeks. It is a game that has a new game every 2 to 3 years and probably has one of the highest turnover rates because, Joey, just like you said, how someone plays Call of Duty 3 isn't necessarily how they're going to have to play Call of Duty 4, and it may not be up to their skill set, their way of thought, their mental process of how they play that game. Someone else is going to come along and unseed them. There's going to be so much turnover. It's unstable in that aspect. And you're going to ask for $25 million for it? Come on. I think that's, it's way overpriced. Way overpriced.
I'm going to be very surprised to see who buys into this league, to be honest. I would estimate this at $10 million at most, if not even less than that. If League of Legends is asking for $10 million, I feel like this has to even go less, like a 5 to 7 range. At the same point, I understand they're going to use the Overwatch League model that's starting to show some success in certain areas, so they're hoping to grow upon that, with Activision being the parent of both of these. At the same point, like I said, that Call of Duty scene, there's just so much turnover, like you hit on as well, John. It's just, there's so much instability with the scene in general. It continues to live on, but again, you have to build those new relationships with players. As a fan, it's so much harder to buy into that. With that all being looped into a big price here of $25 million, it's just, it's hard to justify this one. At the same point, they are doing the city-based league, which is something we see Overwatch League now transitioning to as well. Nate Nancer has confirmed that Overwatch League teams will move to and compete in their home markets in 2020. This was initially supposed to happen at the launch of Overwatch League. When it was initially announced, they were hoping to have people out for Season 1. It didn't happen. It didn't happen in Season 2 either. Now it is sounding like it's going to happen for Season 3 in 2020. I'm excited for this, Sean. At the same point, I can see, one, jet lag possibly being a factor. They're trying to work that out by having teams play within their conference for the most part, instead of easing the, like, trying to ease them more into that jet lag. So if they're playing overseas, they'll be playing a few teams overseas while they're there. And I think that's going to help. At the same point, I'm very curious to see if these stadiums fill up, for one, and two, what the costs are going to be for travel now, with this league still not quite making back of the money that people have invested in yet.
Yeah, and how much is it going to cost to go to these games? If owners are going to be looking to recuperate their money, they may do it through ticket sales. They may do it through, you know, ownership of whatever studio or arena they're going to be playing in. And that's just going to drive the cost up and up. So I'm kind of curious, how much are they going to charge? You know, a League of Legends ticket to the LCS costs, I believe, like $30 a week per day. So if you go on a Saturday to the LCS, it's $30 and you get 5 high quality games. You know, are you going to be charging $30 for one game? You know, what happens when the Washington Justice travel over to Europe? There's only 2 teams in Europe. What happens if they, you know, I mean, if they go to Asia, it's a little bit easier because you have all the Chinese teams and now, you know, the South Korea team too. But other than that, like, Europe is still in a really bad position here for anyone that has to travel over there. Because, you know, there's only 2 teams. Is it really going to be worth that same kind of trip where, like, let's say London flies to the East Coast to play in their Atlantic division? They have all these teams up and down the East Coast they can play. It's a better bang for their buck for London to do it versus any other team, you know, in the Atlantic Conference to go all the way over to Europe to only play 2 games.
So the other big question I have here is going to be the blackout market, in a sense. Like, let's say you and I have an event early Saturday morning and there's a Washington Justice match at like 2 p.m. and we know we're not going to be able to make it out for the event. Are we going to have to buy some kind of subscription to end up watching that match? Are they going to cut down the viewership where it is subscription based in certain markets? Because that to me is a big red flag as well. I love the idea of supporting the local team, but if you start putting a price tag on this already expensive league, in a sense, then am I really going to continue to support it? Am I really going to continue to buy into it? And me in particular, I probably will. But at the same point, that's going to be a question that a lot of casual fans have. If you're not the biggest, let's just use Washington Justice because we're here. If you're not the biggest Justice supporter and you can't make it out to all these matches, are you still going to subscribe to watch them be a viewership model? Or am I going to look into other teams? Will I be able to even view other teams? So I think one thing we go here with the home and home is we're going to see a subscription model pop up. If it's included in the all access pass price of whatever it was, $10, $15, I think that's acceptable. But if we're looking at more and more money on a per team basis, it starts to get out there for me, and I don't know if it's worth it.
Yeah, I agree with you 100% there.
With that, let's head on into the Overwatch League playoffs, and we can break down some of these standings and talk briefly about playoffs before wrapping up with League of Legends. Our division leaders at the end of Stage 1 are the Vancouver Titans for the Pacific region at 7-0, and the New York Excelsior at 7-0 as well for the Atlantic region, with the other teams falling into playoff contention being the Philadelphia Fusion from the Atlantic region at 5-2, tied up with the Toronto Defiant of the Atlantic as well at 5-2. The Atlanta Reign at 4-3, falling just below for the Atlantic as well. And wrapping us up in that final spot, San Francisco Shock at 4-3 for the Pacific region. But overall, John, so looking at all these teams, what are your thoughts going into these playoffs? I'm excited because we have a lot of young talent and a lot of new teams actually represented. Three of these teams are new teams. The Toronto Defiant, the Atlanta Reign, and Vancouver Titans will are all added for season two. So seeing them really batting up here with the Titans, with the New York Excelsior up here, who continue to dominate what it felt like League One stage after stage. Now the Titans are tied with them heading into the playoffs. All of these other teams really competing as well. Toronto Defiant right up there with the Philadelphia Fusion, who had a great beginning to their season as well. So I'm really excited to see how this all plays out. Overall, I think I have to favor the New York Excelsior. The fact that they've been here before, they've done very well here before. But at the same point, Vancouver is not one to roll over either.
Yeah, Vancouver had that offseason roster that had a lot of people excited for and rightfully so. Their roster is incredibly stacked. They performed incredibly well. I really think I honestly have to give Vancouver the edge here. Yeah, I understand New York has that experience. They've also choked quite a bit in the stage playoffs and in the championship playoffs as well. I'm gonna have to go with Titans being the favorite here. But yeah, I completely agree with you. The fact that we have three new organizations in the playoffs goes to show you just how awesome this expansion really was, bringing in new players, new talent into the Overwatch League scene, showing how this game truly is still growing, regardless of all the talks about, you know, Blizzard killing it because of meta and goats and everything else like that. So it's really cool to see more players coming into the scene on a professional level and showing that they can make it into the playoffs as well.
Do not sleep on those Titans. But for now, we are headed over to League of Legends, where they actually have updated their website for playoffs.
So Europe, the LEC is the only one transitioning their way into the playoffs. So let's take a look at the spring split, regular split season standings, because you know that made complete sense. First place was G2 Esports, 13-5. Second place, Origin, 12-6. Fnatic marches all the way back from the bottom of Europe to third place to tie with Splice at 11-7. Joey, congratulations. In fifth place, Team Vitality, 10-8. Sixth place, SK Gaming, 10-9. Schalke in seventh at 9-10. Misfits in eighth at 8-10. XL Esports, 5-13 in ninth place. And Rogue, well, they got two wins, 2-16, finishing where Fnatic began, and that is in 10th place, which leaves us with the following playoff scene. And Joey, I think their brackets are wrong, according to at least my page here, because they have G2 and Origin teamed up in the quarterfinals, which I believe is wrong.
No, that is correct.
Is it? Well, why would one and bracket. Two play each other in the quarterfinals?
So this is the Dota-style bracket. Oh. It's pretty much a winner's bracket and a loser's bracket.
I don't like this.
It's interesting. Okay, so to break this down a little bit, Fnatic is your number three seed, so they actually got to choose if they wanted to play the 5 or 6 seed. They ended up choosing the 5 seed, which was Vitality, which then Splice got assigned SK, who was that 6 seed. So Fnatic actually choosing the higher seed for their first round, and they actually chose before the SK match was even done. They did not want to play SK or Schalke in the first round. They wanted Vitality. If they couldn't get Splice, they actually wanted Splice over everyone. With that being said, we now have Fnatic and Vitality, and then Splice and SK in the first round. Next round, we already have G2 and OG matched up as the 1 and 2 seed. The winner of that moves on to the winner's final. The loser of that has to wait, and they will play one of the winner of the other team from the lower bracket. So let's just say, for the heck of it, Fnatic advances and Splice advances. The winner of Fnatic and Splice would go on to play the loser of G2 Origin. Then whoever wins that match would go on to play G2 or Origin, whoever's in that final from there.
So G2 and Origin, the winner of that match automatically goes to the finals.
Goes to the winner's finals, yes.
That seems and like I believe an incredibly easy road.
Yeah, it's very interesting the way they did. I am actually not a fan of the setup. I really like the winner-loser bracket setup with big tournaments, but unless you're playing like 20 teams, it just does not make sense for this small of a team. I mean, you only have 6 teams in the whole competition. Someone's automatically making it to the finals. It just feels way, way too easy for me.
Okay. Well, the good news is those games do not start for another week. So we have this week off of the LEC, and it picks back up next week, I believe on the 28th. I believe it's the 28th and the 29th, or maybe it's the 29th.
29th.
Yeah, the 29th. So
with Fnatic Vitality.
That will give me time to research this madness that is the LEC and their style here. And I believe next week, Joey, we can go into predictions for your beloved LEC and see where Fnatic bows out of this competition, or if they can make a run all the way to the finals and win, like a lot of people are claiming they can do. So that should be interesting. But let's say we hold off on predictions till next week.
No, Fnatic's going to win it all. It's going to be nice and clean.
Wow.
My biggest problem here is Vitality. Vitality is a question mark for me, but I think Jizuke is still a little bit injured. Fnatic is coming into their element. Broxah is using the early game so well, and Nemesis is falling into his place. Nemesis did so well against Caps even last week, and Bwipo did so well against SOAZ 2 weeks ago. The fact that the rookies are overpassing their veterans, overpassing the people who really trained them in a sense, or that they took over for it. Whew. Yeah, I really like this. So overall, I'm thinking Fnatic is going to run it. They ended up 8-0 at the end of the season. They are the number one team if you just look at these standings from the second half of the split. I really think they continue to run, and G2 does not quite do as well.
Joey, I'm gonna hold off on my prediction till next week because, you know, that builds up suspense for next week's episode. And so you were so hyped up, you even got choked up over your prediction. So I'm going to calm myself down a little bit. I'm going to go ahead and take a step back. And I'm going to leave the Level Up Nation a little something to tune into next week for 124. So, Nation, Joey's picking Fnatic. You want to know what I'm picking? Tune in next week. Fine. Simple as that.
Hashtag FNC win.
Yeah, Squirrel. Totally not biased, by the way. Joey is totally fair and balanced.
There's a really good quote out there. I don't remember which caster it's from. It might have been DeFicio even from his former caster days. Everyone beats everyone, but in the end, Fnatic wins. And I think that is exactly what we see in this year's LEC playoffs.
Joey,
but over to the LCS, John.
Thank you.
Don't continue.
No, I don't. I said let's go to North America, please.
Team Liquid holds the ground over here in first place at 14-2. Cloud9 in second place at 12-4. TSM in third at 11-5. FlyQuest in fourth, 9-7. The Golden Guardians scooting into current playoff contention at 7-9. Then we have a three-way tie for sixth place with a 6-10 Echo Fox, Counter Logic Gaming, and Optic Gaming. At ninth place, we have 5-11 Clutch Gaming. And wrapping us up, the team that went to Worlds last year, the team that everyone expected to push for the top, 100 Thieves, sitting 1-0 less at 10th place at 4-12.
1-0 less. Joey, your puns have been on par today.
I appreciate it. So, John, we do not have playoffs in the LCS yet. We are actually 1 week left to go over here. What are your matches of the week to look forward to?
Well, the big one that stands out to me is the TSM Team Liquid match. TSM did beat Team Liquid to hand Team Liquid their first match. Team Liquid is looking to rebound after suffering their second loss that surprised a lot of people this past weekend. So Team Liquid sitting at that 14-2 benchmark now, but TSM in third place now, one loss behind Cloud9, who lost to Echo Fox out of any team. It was Echo Fox this past weekend. One win separates TSM from second place. That's really the biggest game to look forward to, is that TSM Team Liquid. If TSM can pull that off, and if Cloud9 can go 1-1 again, and TSM has that 2-0 weekend, which they can easily do, I feel like TSM, with their other matchup is against Clutch Gaming. Really? If there's anything Clutch, it's TSM in that matchup. I feel like TSM can easily beat Clutch, and if they can beat Team Liquid and Cloud9 goes 1-1, I believe Cloud9 is going up against Clutch as well. And FlyQuest, I think FlyQuest will probably give them some issues. If they played like they did against Echo Fox, FlyQuest can take that game off of them. Cloud9 has to be careful not to lose that second seed spot going into the playoffs. So the game to really the two to watch is the Cloud9 Cloud9 FlyQuest, 5 p.m. Eastern time on the 23rd. And then the other big one is the last match of the week, TSM Team Liquid. That is Sunday the 24th at 7 p.m. Eastern time. Those are the two big ones in my book.
One more to throw in there, actually, Echo Fox and CLG, because they are currently tied for that last playoff spot. It could potentially come down to that match right there. So keep that one in mind as well. That is on the second day, Sunday, March 24th at 5 p.m. Eastern time.
Oh, my gosh. Are we at the end? Are we really there?
Our editor is going to hate us.
Oh, Joe, thank you for your beloved patience with all of this. You're an awesome editor, and we would be a lot more tired and crazy if it wasn't for you helping us. So big shout out to Joe, our editor, for always assisting us with the Level Up podcast.
He is the best.
Well, Nation, that does it for another episode of the Level Up Podcast. But before you go, head on over to patreon.com/OTN and consider becoming a part of the Overtime Network. In return, you will get access to exclusive content that nobody else in the world can get, unless they are a part of the Overtime Network. If you enjoy listening to the Level Up Podcast, let us know. Leave us a review on iTunes and Google Play, or even shoot us a comment on SoundCloud. We would love to hear from you. In fact, we love to hear from all of our listeners so much, we have other ways for you to reach us. Joey, where else can the Level Up Nation go to interact with us and this show?
Level Up Nation, head on over to Instagram, Twitter, and or Facebook and find us at the Level Up Podcast. That is the LVLUP Podcast. You can also find us streaming regularly on Twitch. We do this show on Monday nights as well as other streams throughout the week. Find those at twitch.tv/OTN_live.
All right, make sure you tune in next week as we cover the latest and greatest in gaming and esports news. Do your ears a favor. Hit that subscribe button to know when the next episode of the Level Up Podcast is ready for your listening pleasures. We will catch you all next week. Remember, be nice to your fellow gamers online. And as always,
level up.